Welcome back, Rage Nation. Got myself Pete here.
Not really exciting.
You got Senior Dixon.
I don't think that's appropriate.
And you got Monsieur Leopard.
Explorers deserved it.
No.
Absolutely.
I was disgusted. I cannot believe they've done this.
Why is wacky? Why is that good? It's just nonsense.
I disagree on that. That's not possible.
We're getting the band back together. We're on a mission. Yeah.
Now we've got a whole new list of things to complain about.
Welcome back, Rage Nation. We are at it again. Got myself, Pete, here. And got Dixon, of course, with us down in the land of Puerto Rico. And I don't know why I keep going to Oceania, but we got Liam on with us again, so... Yeah, what's going on, my friend?
It's just something about the air in the Southern Hemisphere, right? It brings out the best of elephant
I players. Think you guys have a similar vibe that just, you know, just an appreciation for some of the saltiness and hot takes and just nonsense that we do on this podcast. So it's always fun.
Yeah, it's always a good time. Looking forward to today.
Yep, and Dixon, you are so excited that you are playing Outcast again, which is awesome because I know that's like... You've played a lot of Outcast in your days, so I know you're excited to go back to it.
I mean, it's my OG faction. Like, the main two reasons why I stopped playing is, like, one, I have been playing them for, like, ever, like, 7 years. And then the second thing is I kept misremembering the rules because in my head I had, like, the rules from, like, three different versions. I think against you the other day I was playing with Taylor and I was like, she's willpower 7. I look at the card, it's like, oh, wait, never mind. I'm done.
No, she's not. Yep, so we're going to go over the Outcast Ashes of Malifaux models today. We're going to just kind of go through the keywords and just be like, okay, what do we think of these models? Not going to read everything, just getting kind of general feels about them. And think, you know, just kind of predicting what we're going to like and what we think might be good with certain combos. Of course, as everything's going to develop, there's going to be new stuff explored and found, and it's going to be a good time. But before we get into the episode, make sure that you guys check us out. You can do that on Twitter. You can do it on our Discord, which is always popping off, even at the early hours of the morning, because we have people all over the world on that thing. So definitely check out the Discord. YouTube channel, we're putting videos like unpacks on there, different just top 10 videos. Dixon and I are actually going to do one after we get a little more into Ashes of just our top 10 models we like from Ashes of Malifaux. So look out for that content coming out on YouTube. And then finally, if you want to support us directly, you can do that by going to patreon.com/ragequitwire, where you can support us. And we appreciate that, especially with that sweet infomercial that Beard made for us. That was really awesome that Rich made that. And I had somebody join just because of that video. So I appreciate it, Rich. And we also have our affiliation link. If you're going to buy all this cool Ashes of Malifaux stuff, definitely use our affiliation link at give us your money, please. Thank you weird.com/ragequitwire. And a little bit goes to the podcast. I will say I was talking with Edic about just kind of the release schedule of some of these models. He was very upset that there is no Bayou model or box on the release schedule yet for things coming out for Ashes. And that makes me a little sad because I want Bash to come out because I want a huge albino frozen alligator, but I guess Bayou's going to get stuff later. Dude, that alligator with Soulstone Cash, it's going to be money.
Yeah. Plus side is almost all the Outcast models will be out by like May. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited for that Sandeep box coming out in April. It's going to be super sweet to get a rune on the table, but we are going to talk about the Outcast stuff, which there is a decent amount of stuff for Outcast coming out. So that's pretty exciting. I don't know. I mean, just a general feel of things coming out. Liam, do you feel like excited about these models coming out? Are you kind of like, I don't know how good it's going to be? Like, what's your general feel like seeing everything kind of splayed out on the table?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. I think there's a lot of really cool new tricks that we're getting access to. It's plugged some holes that the faction's been struggling with a bit for a while. And yeah, like we're like 10 Thunders in that we're the only two factions that where all of our cross-faction masters got their models in different factions, which you know, makes out of keyword hiring a bit less flexible, and it also means we have to buy more boxes. But on the flip side, we have more new models, I guess, to get excited about once you factor in the keyword specific stuff in. And unlike 10 Thunders, we got some random extra stuff, so we've actually got a pretty solid wave coming.
I think we should like look into those models first, because they're so specific to that one master.
Yeah, I was going to actually talk about, are you talking about Dr. Silas specifically?
No. He's talking about cross-faction ones, which is Infamous. Infamous is the only one. We already talked about the wrestler ones, and honestly, they're more wrestler than anything. Like, you're not going to see them really in Outcast, except for Liam.
Jackdaw.
Well, Liam mentioned specifically there is one model that you will see with Jackdaw regardless of faction.
Yeah, I reckon. I like the Ferryman, and I reckon the other one.
Kari.
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 There's a place for Kari in the right matchup if you really need those anti-healing auras and stuff. But yeah, I think you guys basically covered everything to do with those models on the Reza episode. So yeah. I don't really feel the need to rehash that.
That's all right. That's what I do all the time, Liam. I'm like, oh, I know it. This person already covered it. There it is. I'm not worried about it. And then the other cross-faction one was, I guess, with Infamous. Is that it?
Zip and Tyri are the other two. Zip's ones are a little bit interesting. In an Outcast, like from an Outcast-specific context, I kind of like Mossbeard. He's very squishy, but he's got the ability to push markers. And that means that I rather like bringing Rusty Alice into Zip in Outcast, because it gives you access to pit traps. And so you get the ability to push pit traps into people, which is always pleasant. There's honestly doesn't seem like there's much else going for him as a model. I'm a little bit, him and the swashbucklers both feel like they're very much on the squishy end of the spectrum, and it can be proved pretty hard to get some good work out of them.
Yeah. That was literally what I was thinking about. I did not like Mossbeard at all. Like, at all.
Yeah.
There was nothing really that I saw in him, and I was like, yeah, I want to have this model. It's like 7 points for I die and do nothing. Yay.
Yeah, he feels a bit confused. Like, I'm honestly not really entirely sure what that model is meant to do. Like, his best attack is stat 5 at range, and then he's got a...
excuse me, Liam, because somebody was going to tell his best attack is stat 6, and it's a melee attack. It's amazing. Wait, what is it? Oh, it's Sharp Wit.
Sharp Wit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. It's okay. I don't know if you need Sharp Wit.
It's fine. Like if for his actual damage dealing, though, he's only got stat 5. So he's mostly just throwing out negative conditions on people, but I don't know if he lives long enough to do that.
Well, that's the thing. He's going to do a bonus action for a distracted. What is he supposed to, like, I don't know. Unless he's...
Which is stat 5, yeah. Again. So.
Well, I mean, my biggest issue with him, and this is the thing that I see constantly, is an enforcer model that doesn't have anything suited, that doesn't really have a clear purpose, and dies to a stiff breeze. It's like, there's like dozens of these models, and it's very frustrating.
Well, because, and I think that's kind of interesting to point out when you're looking at a model, right? Because he pushes a marker, puts out distracted, he... does this thing with the hand size, he puts out slow. It's like he's kind of trying to be, I guess, a control piece, but he doesn't have anything besides hard to kill to try and hang out and chum in the waters, I guess, but that doesn't help you in Outcast.
He feels like a really scaled down Molly, but yeah.
It's, I mean, I guess that's one way.
Really scaled down.
He looks and feels to me like a bad bow. Like, literally for the same point cost, he's just a bad bow. Like, why would you have this model over bow? They both can heal, they both can damage, they both have some control elements. Literally, there's no reason for this model to exist. He looks awesome, and that's the saddest part.
Yeah, the Castaway vibes. It's pretty good. The yeah, look, I'm not the most experienced Zip player. He's the master I always seem to It's mostly because the models are a pain in the ass to get to the store because they're just so unwieldy. But so I could be missing something, but I'm sort of struggling to find where Moss Beard fits in.
The funny thing is, like, I was looking through cards and I thought, oh my god, this model would be fine if it was in Big Head, but like, I'm not gonna pay 8 points to get him out of keyword. He would be fine. He wouldn't even be good. He would just be fine in Big Head. But the other two models, I think they're great. I think that they have a place. I don't know if, like, if you're a newer player and you want to play with these models instead of like others, then I can see value. The Swashbuckler and Toast.
Swashbuckler. I'm sort of, yeah. I mean, it's fine. I feel like it does also just die, but
against guns, at least... yes. But like, if you play into something that's like mostly melee and you're aware, Combat Finesse has survived stat sevens like throughout the entirety of this game.
That's fair. And yes, it is nice to actually see like a bit more distracted generation as well between him and Mossbeard for Zip 2 synergies. But
yeah. Yeah, that's what I just said in the chat with James talking about some of the debuffs and stuff. I was like, oh, I guess that kind of works with Zip's 2 thing, because what, he can lower distracted to I forget, to do something. I can't even remember what it is offhand because it never came up.
Okay. And you guys don't feel any positive against Toast? Like, I thought that he was really awesome for the price.
I like Toast. Flamethrower, in my opinion, is one of the game's strongest gun attacks. And in Outcast specifically, we've got great synergy with the Catalan Brawler, who has a melee attack with he can build in the hold down trigger to generate an attack, and the attack also gives you staggered. Yep. So that's functionally generating free stat 7 flamethrower shots.
Oh my god, yes.
So Toast with a Brawler in the same list is a fairly cheap module, given that Toast is only 6 points. And yeah, I reckon could really put out some hurt.
Yeah, 14 points for like self-sufficient module of two models just going off on their own. Yeah, that's really good. And the Catalan Brawler defends Toast, and Toast has armor. Like, it's very... I like that. I like the...
Yeah. Yeah. That's an Outcast insight that you're not going to get over and buy you, so that's something worth talking about.
James pointed out something very important, which is the Cutlass being a 2/4/5 on a 6-point model for the Swashbucklers. That's really
when the enemy's
good.
Often on negative to resist as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, swashbucklers are like, they're fairly, a gamble, right? Like, they could die. They could just die.
Yeah.
But if they get in, they're probably going to do some work.
Yep.
They're probably going to do more than some work. They're probably going to hit well above their pay grade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in this GG, they might have a better chance of actually doing a thing. Last GG, they wouldn't have done anything because they just die.
I don't know, man. I've had Combat Finesse make models survive past their, like...
It's true. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Usually then the guns get the matchup, though, right?
Yeah, depends, absolutely. I agree with that. It absolutely depends on the matchup. Like, any gun will just be like, pop, you're dead.
Yeah, and the last crossover that we have is this Bygone stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two models. So I think they're both good.
Yeah, what's two models?
Yeah.
I only need to remember the Slipstreamer.
No, there's a Slipstreamer, and then there's... oh my god, that's right. I misread Casey Jones. You're right. It is only just a Slipstreamer.
I made the mistake of playing a whole lot of Tiri lately. I do not enjoy playing Tiri. So
really?
Just looking at another... Yeah, I went on a whole rant about it on the weird Discord a couple of days ago. It's like several hundred words long.
Do you think it's...
I don't like the fact...
I was going to say, is it just a general kind of rundown of what your feel is on Tiri? Is it more of, I don't know, do you think it's a boring play style? Is it just too efficient and too, like, you get everything? Like, what's your kind of take on it?
I think it's like just fundamentally badly designed on like base principles. I don't think the keyword tells a story, which in Malifaux is fairly criminal because it's one of the best things about Malifaux is the way rules tell stories. I think it manages to be overly complicated, but at the same time, it's like almost a snooze fest to play because the crew's adverse to failure. So it manages to have like way too many memory checks while also at the same time feels like you're playing with training wheels on. It's strong. It does everything you want it to do, but I really dislike the actual experience of playing it because it just feels badly done.
I don't like it either. Well, I mean, it's just, that's what I'm saying. It's like everything gets shielded. Well, now that you're shielded, you get all these triggers built in, and now you get to draw cards once per turn, and then you get all these pushes, and the Iron Matron's fast, and now she's in your deployment zone killing stuff. And
I really like,
you know, your TNs are so low. Like the number of, like, you've got all these great actions that for some reason only need twos or threes, or have like after resolving triggers, or have no TN at all.
And I don't even know the backstory of this, because honestly, they just look like another robot faction. Like I get their kind of alien technology, but I'm like, okay, whatever.
They're meant to be burning a lot too.
But like their story is they're meant to be this cursed race that's slowly burning alive, and there's the word burning doesn't appear on like any stat card in the keyword.
None of the cards.
I feel like Scars of Sharuf should require you to like gain a point of burning when you declare the trigger or something to just at least represent that facet of them. But anyway, this is getting off topic. The Slipstream is kind of similar to the Zip models. To me, look like they're like they're kind of squishy. I could definitely see them just dying.
I mean, the defense 6 and 1 shielded. They're just scheme runners. I think that they're really good for what they do, but you are right. They're just going to die if you get a straight flip on them. Like two
and they're also flips. Sort of more of that Tyrion design in that, like, they get their shielded for free, so they get their triggers for free, so everything's just kind of free, and now I'm tired and I want to move on.
Okay, just because you're upset that they are... I think they're going to do their job before they die, so they're going to be like a... Unless somebody gets jumped on turn one with, like, I don't know, a big model like the Valedictorian, I think they're going to be fine because of the shielded. So they're going to get to do their one job. That being said, though, what would this... take out, because like they're very tight in that list. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out that part. Like, I think their list is pretty tight. So yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you put like Cat Parsons, you know, the toss bot and whatever other nonsense you put in there, just there's not a lot of stones left for this.
Correct. So like
pretty much
you can take out the warrior. You can take out the hodgepodge. Maybe I don't know. It's kind of weird. To figure out what to put in and take out. But yeah, no, I personally think these models are great. The Slipstreamers, especially because they have two abilities that are just insane. One of them being all terrain.
And I don't think that the keyword needed like a good scheme runner. And this doesn't even, it seems like an okay scheme runner. But I mean, the totem, the Ouroboros already goes fast and can scheme and crap, if I remember correctly. And the keyword itself is already pretty quick because of all the pushes and crap.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah.
Because Tyria can just move models around like cheap.
Yeah. I mean, all terrain, though, is incredibly powerful. Like, they had to remove it from Loaiza because it was so insanely powerful. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I still think that there's value in these models.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying there's any value. And you might see actually more value on the Maxine side of this.
Ooh. That's a good point.
I think Maxine could use a cheap model like this more than
Orville, because Orville is their one fast, like, swingy model.
And he dies so much.
Yeah, so I think that...
I make a point to dunk that model whenever I get a chance.
Yeah, I think that's actually the two things is this is probably going to be more seen more in EVS than in Bygone. So. But I still think that in Bygone he's good because he's a free shielded on a model that you can just like have on the periphery.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to talk about the giant hulking monster in the room, Dr. Silas, first, if that's fine with you gentlemen.
Sure.
Because I don't pop into the Outcast Discord a bunch, but I see a bunch of people talking about this dude. And I even see it on some of the other ones because Dr. Silas has Asylum and Half-Blood. So he's dipping into two keywords that a lot of people like. A lot of people like the Doctor stuff. A lot of people like the Half-Blood, especially the new Half-Blood stuff. So Oh. I mean, Dixon, you sound a little excited about it, so I don't know if you want to pop this off a little bit.
He's straight incredible. Okay, so I shouldn't say that, like, oh my god, he's super busted. No, it's the fact that you get in Outcast access to freaking nurses, that you get access to Angel Eyes. So, like, you can have Angel Eyes and nurses in the same group, give them double focus. You can have scavengers just join in as a, you know, one scavenger giving out focus, pushing models 4 inches. There's so much good. And Silas is tanky enough that you're not going to see him die. Also, the fact that he's not a frontline beater. He has toss, so he's going to be delivering payloads left and right. So, yeah, I the more I looked at this model, the more I was excited about it. And then he has a couple of really good upgrades for his in-keyword model. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he's great in the counterpunch because he does about 2, 4, 5 with drink blood and all that stuff. He has black blood. But yeah, toss. Having toss and most of the models that you wear in your faction being size 2, oh my god, this model is so amazing.
No, I'm certainly got plans to put on the table. For some reason, I actually already own the Asylum box. I'm not entirely sure what that was for. So I only need to pick up the Half-Blood one to have access to the full range of stuff. Oh, and nurses. Okay, I would need to buy nurses.
Liam, just a quick thingy. I don't know if you know about this, but Angel Eyes just won Captain Con. She went 5-0. I'm not even exaggerating. Pete can tell you that. It was ridiculous.
Okay.
Yeah. Zoraida Angel Eyes turns out it's pretty good.
Well, that said, I've been trying to write crews with this guy, and the main problem is, frick me, it's squishy. It's so squishy. There's like nothing in Asylum or in Half-Blood that feels like it could take a hit. Silas, if you're considering Silas to be your master, he can't take a hit. He's like on one of the if he was a master, he'd be one of the squishiest masters in the entire game, because he's defense 5, willpower 6, 12 hit points, and no defensive rules. It's just him and stones,
baby.
Yep.
So I feel like you probably need either Barbaros or Montresor in the crew, just to have something that can provide a meat shield. And
I wasn't thinking about Montresor. I was thinking about Barbaros for real.
I like so Barbaros is cool because of the synergies it had. Like, yeah, the crew has black blood effects, and
black blood
he can join in on that fun.
They have black blood protection.
And one of the upgrades on Silas hands out more black blood. So Barbaros can just sort of join in on the black blood train.
Like James is saying in the chat, he combos really well with Grimwell.
With Montresor, yeah, that's why I'm thinking Montresor, because once you can have the ability to put Staggered out and keep Staggered permanently in play, Grimwell comes really heavily online, especially because Silas's upgrades let you build in the second crow, and so now you don't need a stone, you don't need a card, Grimwell can just guarantee lobotomy,
just murder the crap out of you.
All he need, I think that all pairs together quite well, but I don't expect this crew to necessarily take off competitively by any sense, because I think it's just too many models that just die to an alpha strike.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Well, I think it's just, well, and here's why, Dixon. It reminds me a lot of, like, honestly, like a Barbaros led crew, right? Where you can do some really cool things with it and you're going to win like a solid amount of games. Like, orderlies are really good scheme runners, you know. And you have a couple good beaters, but they're a little fragile. And it reminds me a lot of that Nephilim Barbaros stuff, because it's good and you got some cool, you know, toys that you can bring with it. But like Liam was saying, I think if it gets punched in the mouth too hard, just evaporates just very badly.
I mean, I guess I don't see it the way that you guys are seeing it, because you're right that, I mean, he doesn't have any defensive measures except for black blood and 12 health, but he doesn't have to be in the front lines. And he does, like I said, he has access to drink blood. So he can survive somebody trying to jump him with at least 2 models.
The problem is, if he isn't on the front lines, then kind of who is? Because I don't really want, I mean, Grimwell at some point is going to have to be on the front line. So I don't want him being my tank, because he's pretty squishy. you know, Angel Eyes falls off, falls over if anyone looks at her funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't really...
There's no tank in these keywords beyond what you can bring in as versatile throughout a keyword in Outcasts. And that gets expensive really quickly.
Yeah, but this is a very alpha crew. They, like, send models in to kill. Also, Barbaros is one of your two tanks. Barbaros is
Super tank. That's why I said Barbaros or Montresor, at least one of them should absolutely guarantee be in the list, if not both.
That being said, I don't think...
Because, like, Barbaros is cool. You can toss Barbaros because he's only actually size 2 from memory.
No, he's 3.
So... Barbaros?
Oh, said Barbaros. I heard Montresor.
Oh, yeah. Montresor is 3. Yes. No fun synergies there.
So, Liam, I don't think that you're going to be doing a lot of tanks. You're probably going to have just the one with Barbaros or Monty, like you said. That being said, I don't think that this model has to survive past turn 1, really. All he has to do is deliver the payload with toss and give out a couple of upgrades. That's just my take, just by watching, you know, walking through his rules.
My worry is just if my opponent attacks any model in my crew bar the one tank that I hired, then those models will just die.
Really?
And, like, yeah, because if they make a focus shot on a nurse, the nurse is dead. If they put any serious attention to Grimwell probably dies because he's only got defense 6 to keep him alive.
Defense 6 and stones, and I think that's it.
Orderlies fall over if they get attacked. None of the enforcers in Half-Blood are particularly survivable. There's just nothing that can withstand any amount of pressure. So, a Necama crew would just blender this, because they'd just go around the one tank and kill every other model. And, you know, what you're going to do?
I mean, I can see what you're talking about, but, like, how can I say this? I think that there's enough here. Yeah, you're right on the orderlies, but I think that there's enough here to actually survive a fight with Necama while you're doing missions. Mostly because I've seen it and done it, but, like, I think good players are going to make this a lot harder to do, so maybe that's why, because you probably played it. Oh, have you been playing Vassal?
I certainly have, but I hadn't touched Vassal in quite a while, but having all this new stuff to test out has given me quite a few games in. Not with Silas yet, though.
Gotcha.
But I thoroughly intend to, like... There is definitely a tournament in my future where I just try to solo Silas through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, for all that I'm talking him down, I do want to play him, and I am interested to see what it's like.
Yeah, because I think that Grimwell one-shotting... Or not one-shotting, but you know what I mean. Like, doing... between 7 and you know, plus damage to somebody, it's like, holy crap, this guy is insane. I don't know. I value some of these models on like, you know, payload delivery and then surviving only to turn 3. And I thought that they were really good.
Yeah, basically. Like, I think they'll do fine to a point, but they're a very easy crew to counter. So I don't imagine they're going to, you know, tear up the competitive rankings or anything. It's a crew that's just a bit too susceptible to getting punched.
Okay.
But, look, I haven't put them on the table yet. It's a bunch of models that I've never had access to in my faction before, so I'm prepared to accept that I could be wrong, and I certainly look forward to testing it out. The upgrades that you can put out are pretty interesting too. The one for Asylum models feels like it's really just best to then discard for the positive suit. But being able to do a damage to one of your other models that has Black Blood has its uses, I guess. But yeah, that's about it. The one for Half-Blood models, that's cool upgrade. The giving loot on demand
money.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's money all over the place. Because, like, you can do... The only two half-bloods that are seen play right now are the little minions and Angel Eyes. And then Maurice gets some play every now and then.
Mm-hmm. And Silas can make the Blood Wretches in a pinch if one of the Asylum models dies. So...
That's going to be so good.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on there. But yeah, look, I'll need to test it. I look forward to testing it.
yeah, absolutely. Like, that's the thing, because I'm not, like, super convinced. For example, the thing that I liked the most about these upgrades was the possibility of just putting an upgrade on, like, Grimwell. And then having Grimwell get a positive attack and double crow without actually having to do anything crazy. He just has double crow for lobotomy.
Yep. 100%.
So, I mean, that's super insane in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And that combination with Montresor to just trivialize the whole experience is...
Oh, so good. Because then everybody's staggered. Oh, Monty. I didn't know about that before you mentioned it, and now I'm like, yeah, I definitely have to test out Monty with them, because I already played Grimwell against Pete a couple of times, and he's really good. He's just super squishy, like you said. Well, he's not super squishy. He's squishy because defense 6 and hard wound is in stones is all he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at least with Montresor there with his Demise Eternal and locking everyone in place so that they have a harder time to like get into the squishier models. Yeah, I think that could be what the crew needs. I was just gonna say, did we want to move on to trial and error? But
yeah. That's actually what I was gonna say. I think maybe with like the other models, like trial and error and stuff. Maybe that makes a difference. I haven't played them. They seem interesting. How do you feel?
I've had a hard time fitting them into a list. They're very, you know, Mr. Tannen in Lynch. They give me very strong similar vibes. Though I will say, fast to speak on a boring conversation model is way better than manipulative, because you actually do want to go first with these models and put up the aura.
The defensive trigger, I'm like, what the crap is this?
It the way the math works out, it kind of makes them defense 7 50% of the time is essentially the vibe. So yeah, they're interesting. They're just hard to fit in, because besides that boring conversation, like, their attacks are okay, but like,
Projective voice is decent.
My main problem, though, is from writing Silas lists, is that points get really tight very quickly. Like, you're spending 9 or 10 points to get Barbaros or Montresor in there for a tank. You're picking up Grimwell at 9 points. You want Angel Eyes, because of course you want Angel Eyes. You want nurses.
Do you want one or two nurses? I think it's like you have to choose which of the two packets you're gonna go with, though. And you have like one or two models that are going to be both. Because if you have Angel Eyes, but you only have the two shots, is that good enough?
Yeah. Do you consider bringing in a Catalan Brawler because he's fairly tanky and you can give Angel Eyes more shots? So there's a lot of like competition for trial and error. And they're like... 50% of the time they're relatively tanky, but the other 50% of the time they just die.
Just flop over and die. I was like looking at them, I was like, this is gonna be an interesting model, but if they get anywhere near the front lines, you flip a coin and they die.
Yep. And and they want to be on the front lines because they've got boring conversation and the ability to like put out an unresisted point of staggered if they get the trigger.
I would drop a 10 or possibly an 11, depending on who I'm playing against.
Well, hopefully you shouldn't even need to, because they'll just have an upgrade on them and they can spend the upgrade to build in the suit. But
that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's So they're neat, but I haven't actually managed to fit them into any of the lists I've written. They also make me quite annoyed that neither they nor Silas are versatile. I don't know if I would hire either of them too often if they were versatile, right. But it would be nice if Weird had just pretended that it was an option.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's ever a world where because the thing is, one of the models that we're going to talk about makes it so that the giant the robot from the bygone becomes size 4. And it's 1 point cheaper than Silas. Silas would also be size 4 for the tosses. But you see what I'm going with this, right? That allows us that you can start tossing size 3 models. And that would make it so that, why would I go for Silas when I can just go for the ancient construct?
What was it that makes them size 4, sorry?
Oh, I think we've talked about Silas enough that we can go on to the mercenary bandits.
Of course.
So let's just talk about Ellie Mae. And Ellie Mae is part of this thing that I was looking around when I was like, okay, so what combos are good with this? And I saw ancient construct with this makes it so that I can toss the big Victoria, the size 3 Victoria, because she has an ability in the front called Firing Platform. That is amazing, because you can toss her and the Victorious with the ancient construct. I think that's worth something. I don't know about you guys, but being in the middle of the table is pretty dang good for the Victorious.
Yeah, look, the bandit models are I like all the outcast models. The bandit ones, these bandit mercenary chaps are definitely the ones that got me the most excited.
Oh, yeah. Goodbye, Comic Gun Slingers. Goodbye, Woko Raiders. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I've definitely played these two more than, I think I've played more games with them than every other new release combined so far. Almost all in play.
They're amazing.
I actually haven't played, I think I've played them in their actual keywords yet. But I've played a lot of them in Plague. And they're really good.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Yeah, Bandit's got, I was annoyed to see that LMA was 8 points, because Bandit has a serious over concentration in the 8 point slot. There are I think there are 5 with LMA, there are 5 8 point bandit models,
and they're not nearly as good as LMA.
Well, most of them are famously mediocre at best, so Bandit being the only exception. So yeah, LMA supplants all of them pretty much immediately, and it's more...
I did, because you mentioned Benny right there, and I do want to take a quick side kind of tangent here for a second. Have you seen this Dead Man Walking list without Benny in it that's been kind of kicking around?
No, but I don't approve. I think I've seen the list, but I don't approve. There's nothing else you can put in that slot that is worth as much value as Benny is. I get why people do it.
Wow.
But that 8 points for Benny is just impossible to compete with in Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, but the Woku Raiders, Sue, just not doing as much as Benny is.
They just don't live up to that same level.
I mean,
LMA's pretty good.
Honestly, I think that after Ellie Mae and the Six Shooter, there is no reason ever to bring a Comic Gunslinger or a freaking Woku Raid. Absolutely no reason whatsoever.
I'd agree. One of those two, and I haven't decided which, is always going to be my final model now in the standard build. And which one I pick will probably change from time to time. So LMA can almost do a better version of Parker One's turn one gun threat if what you want to do is just snipe out a model. Slightly lower severe damage, but she is stat 6 at least, so that's a fair bit better. And she can ignore cover or concealment if she has to.
Or friendly fire, or if she puts up the upgrade, she can ignore friendly fire and another ability.
The upgrade is so cool. You can do things like it, you, there are ways to get too focused on her turn one thanks to six arm six shooters, but even if you don't want to do that, there's like just taking a sniper shot, going for your min damage, but just trying to put the upgrade on your opponent's beater and make them have to like consider if they actually want to move forward into like a next turn's like fuel assert of min three shots from the two of these models is a really good psychological pressure play. Like you just tag their master top of turn one with the upgrade, and then you just like, do you want to come forward? I've got so many guns waiting for you.
Come on, it's okay. It's okay. The funny thing is, like, he only technically has two shots, but if you get a mask, those three shots are going to feel like hell. This is going to be really painful.
Yeah. The other cool thing she's... I mean, so this is going to be a recurring theme through the rest of the dual keyword models, but LMA is... I feel like Outcasts have been missing a reliable schema ever since the nerf to the Midnight Stalker.
Yeah, he got Yasunori'd. It was pretty sad.
I've still run him from time to time, but I probably won't once all the Ashes models are out, because every single one of those boxes contains a model that I consider to be a pretty valid substitution for the Midnight Stalker. So LMA is that for the Bandit Mercenary keywords, because not that Mercenary really needed a substitution, but she's smooth six, she has battle tempo, and she has ride with me. So she goes like, what is that, 13 inches and can interact every turn if all you want is a schema. And she can be carrying someone with her with the ride with me to make the, like, give them more viability. The only thing on LMA that really bugs me is the firing platform rule. I know there are good synergies for it with the tossing. But it reads to me like someone heard my complaints about the way Parker 2 doesn't work well with Drop It, but they didn't actually understand what the problem was. And so they tried to fix it, but the rule doesn't actually fix the problem because it only works in their activation. And that is the one time it wasn't a problem.
Okay.
But because... basically, the Parker's problem, to quickly recap, is that the way Drop It works allows the opponent to always just drop the marker out of Parker's line of sight. And so if firing platform were not solely in Parker's activation, then theoretically she would let him see over the heads of other models and always get line of sight to those markers to make it...
Well, because it would make him a size 3 instead of, you know... And most of the stuff he's shooting at is 2. So he would be able to see where they're placing it.
So you'd be able to overcome that line of sight limitation for triggering Perdition. But because it's just during his activation, it doesn't actually help the problem, because in his activation, Drop It has to be in his line of sight anyway. It's everyone else's activation that was the problem. But aside from that, LMA is phenomenal, and she can do so many different things. In my plague crews, I've basically just been using her as a kind of expensive Catalan rifleman, just to drop two markers in a single activation while also moving Hamlin up the board. And that's like, that is not the most efficient way to play her. But that, I was just trying to see if I could pull off a consistent 8-rat a turn summon. Which
I'm always for a force multiplier, and honestly, what you just described is a heck of a force multiplier if Hamlin starts, you know, way more up the board than normal. That's I don't know. I see it as a bonus anyway.
Yeah. The big model for Hamlin is, in my opinion, the other one, the six arm six shooter. I was mostly just bringing LMA because I figured I'd test both models at once. And then after having both models on the table at once, I went, oh, I actually really like LMA even out of keyword. So
what does the six arm six shooter do that you really like with Plague?
With Plague. So fundamentally it's his combination with Benny. He can, on turn one, you can pretty reliably, get 8 scheme markers in play for Benny to summon rats off of.
That seems like a lot.
It's pretty fantastic. So the way it works is you've got gamble, so you get a guaranteed enemy scheme marker on turn one in range of Benny, which doesn't like force you into like it doesn't take up space because it doesn't block you from taking interact actions. And then the other huge thing he's got going for him is his bonus action of exhibition shooting, which lets you move scheme markers. So what you kind of do is you have models run around Benny dropping scheme markers via interact actions, and then you activate the six-arm six-shooter, have him interact to drop a scheme marker at his base, then you exhibition shooting it to push it underneath one of the existing markers, and then you cheat, and because the TN at that point is like a -3, because the TN of the action is dependent on how far away it is.
Yeah, and you put it in base to base, so it's 0, and no matter what you flip, you pass.
Yeah. But if you have any mask at all in hand, you can cheat the mask in to get the action to go again. And so you can end up with 3 scheme markers in one spot, and then more models can interact in those same places to get in the places those markers used to be. And you can basically do that with the help of one other model that has a way of generating a scheme marker via a method that isn't interacting. So like the Emissary or Yannick or the new Fumigator model.
So good.
Then if you have even just one of those models, you can get 8 rats down. I have written a list. I don't think it's a good list, but I'm pretty sure I can get all 12 scheme markers down or 12 rats on the table in turn one. Thanks to the combination of this guy and a couple of the new releases, but that's the plague version of six arm six shooters. The actual intentional in keyword version of him is still very good because he's got a gun with some great blast damage that ignores hard to wound.
I mean, you can still do that with Parker too, though, right? You're still bringing Benny there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably not going quite so hard on the turn one summoning, but absolutely, six-arm six-shooters is so good. He actually has a trigger. His trigger that drops a scheme marker isn't drop it, and you get to control where the scheme marker goes, so he actually gets to proc perdition.
But it's only between you and the target. Whatever shall you do?
Yeah.
Liam, you have no idea how many times like we've heard people say that, like, "Oh, vantage point is not that good." I'm like, "Are you crazy?"
Oh, it's phenomenal. But look at those triggers. All three of those, he has three of the 4 suits are phenomenal. Are triggers, and all 3 triggers are phenomenal. You're looking at either Perdition Damage in Parker 2, or you're looking at Stunning Strike, or you're looking at getting another shot. And the attack is a 2-3-4. But it ignores hard to wound, and it has like double blast on the severe damage. So this guy can do phenomenal amounts of damage, honestly, for a cost 7 model. It's very similar to having a flamethrower on hand. But
my two favorite things about this model specifically, I mean, aside from everything that you said, but like the favorite things are if you're using Ellie Mae and you get the upgrade on the one model that you really absolutely need to kill. It makes it so that this guy can do 5 damage on the top end and ignores friendly fire. And like you can just jam people into whatever that target is. And this guy can run and gun and just blast off of it. Well, oh my God, I love it so much.
No,
yeah, doing actually, that plus 1
on the note of that upgrade. The upgrade gives ignoring friendly fire to all bandit models. And I didn't entirely tweak to this until halfway through one of my play games. When it happened, Benny has a trigger on his gun that like basically never comes up. And it's called Rat Bomb. It blows up a rat. It does +1 damage to the target, and it makes the attack an AOE attack. The problem is Benny doesn't ignore friendly fire, and for a rat to be base to base with someone, that rat, while the rats don't engage, the rats can be engaged, and that means that you suffer from friendly fire. So it's almost impossible to actually have that trigger just like naturally come up. But it, I, but I think I've done it once in all my games with Hamlin, and then it happened a second time because Ella May put out her upgrade and suddenly Benny could ignore friendly fire and there were rats in the area, and I was like, oh, I can rat bomb. I can actually rat bomb. And so, yeah. So you get that cool little trick as well. And on top of all that, he's got ways to make freaking hazardous terrain and give focus to LMA.
Suppressing fire is going to be like the most used ability on his card. But, you know, everything else that we talked about, he's amazing.
I was just going to say, looking at these two models, do you guys think that this benefits Bandit more, or it's going to benefit Mercenary, or is it a little bit of both?
That's so hard to pick. In Mercenaries, you absolutely get the toss combo, which is insane. But in Bandit, I mean, Leon just said a whole bunch of stuff that gives you scheme markers. And pushing scheme markers on people in Bandits is really powerful.
I think they're probably stronger in Bandit, but not because they're not good in Mercenary, just because Bandit had more deeply average models that you kind of don't want to take, and these guys are just gonna like take the place of your convict gunslingers, your Sioux, your Waco Raiders, and they're just gonna make the keyword a bit more flexible. Also, the fact that they're armored and Bandit models means they get a lot out of Pearl's healing, which previously you didn't have anything with damage reduction that Pearl could heal. So I think they get a lot there, but not to knock them in Mercenary. They're going to be solid in Mercenary.
Honest to God, I think that in Mercenary, that toss combo is just going to go just off the rails.
So you keep saying the toss combo, but is there... So for people listening, Dixon, what specific models are you looking at tossing with Mercenary?
I think we mentioned it earlier, but Taylor, prime example, a fast Taylor with double focus. That's always awesome. I was thinking about this model when I was thinking about Silas. Not with Taylor, obviously, in the Silas. I was thinking Barbaros in that context. Just little things like that. Ellie May making the Ancient Construct 1 inch bigger than all the big beaters that you can toss. That can be a thing. In this specific context, I was thinking, in the Ellie May Mercenary thing, it was... Ancient Construct tosses Ellie May and the Master 10 inches forward. And then Ellie May can go on do her thing. And the Master, obviously, the Vickies, the size 3 Vickies, if necessary, can, instead of like being Ellie May, you can do it to Taylor. So then you have a Taylor and a Vicky. And then Vicky can toss Taylor 6 inches forward. There's a lot of little things. I'm just trying to put it on the table. I was thinking about this yesterday, but I haven't been able to put it on the table yet.
A small thing that 6x6 Shooters has as well. Like, I've talked about how nice Gamble is with Benny for just the extra rat, but there's a bunch of random little things that having a free scheme marker at the start of the game helps you with in Mercenary specifically. Like, it sets you up for a... Covetous Cravings without having to interact first, so that you get kind of like a much more free, fast turn one on something if you've brought the student of conflict. Or if you have a prospector or a model with the soldier for hire upgrade, having an enemy scheme marker in your deployment zone turn one just translates into an extra soulstone, because you've got this will fetch a high price on both the upgrade and prospector, or you can use it for card draw if you've got Wanted Criminal, which frequently you do in Mercenary, because you might want to put Wanted Criminal on a Ronin. It's not my favorite choice, but if you've done that, you've got extra setup. So it almost feels like it makes 6x6 Shooters a point cheaper, because you can so easily convert that that free marker into a soulstone.
I mean, I do love Ronin, so giving two of my Ronins one to Criminal is not a thing that that usually I like to do. But hey, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go with the Fumigator. I think we talked Ellie May and the six shooter so freaking much. Let's just go to the Fumigator because we were talking about Plague.
Yes. So funnily enough, I have not actually put either of the Plague models on the table yet, despite most of my testing of these new models being in Plague. So
the Fumigator, I think it's great. Just saying.
I think
better
it's
than the DCU.
Decent. I certainly don't think it's better than the DCU. DCU is so much stronger. I just think the flamethrower attack is too good for Hamlin, because Hamlin's mostly a melee crew, and having one of the best range attacks in the game available just for like early game pressure is just too useful. But the Fumigator is solid. Like it's fairly tanky. It can build in its suits. It's got AoEs on its melee attack. It's got shockwave, which is not something that the Plague keyword normally does. And it can make rats, which is fun.
I mean, both the Fogger and the Friends in Low Places have like great triggers, in my opinion. Like, for example, Sweeping Strike. Sweeping Strike is insane on a attack that already has blast. So you're double blasting off of melee attacks. And then you have reference the field guide. And every one of these attacks gives out poison. That's insane, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's solid. I don't know about insane, because, like, again, the DCU on severe, if the DCU does severe damage, which is what you really want, it has double blast without needing a trigger. So it's not necessarily anything new to the keyword, but it is cute that you can bring both, because it adds a lot of AoE pressure to a crew that's already very good in like brawls, and you combine it with stuff like extended reach to make your opponent less efficient when you're engaging your crew, and it's another armored model, creating a weird little sub theme of armor in a keyword that is traditionally very, very squishy. Yeah,
I think that. And you guys play Hamlin a lot. I'm looking at this more from the Von Schill side of it, because I played more Von Schill for sure. Mm-hmm. And for me as a Von Schill player, I think the Tunnel Rats are probably the more exciting thing.
Ooh.
Because getting Secret Passage to actually go scheme for Von Schill definitely is something I think that it helps that keyword out a lot. Because besides Rocket Boots, yeah, you got, you know, stuff that can go scheme, but this gives you a cheapish model that can, you know, give an upgrade, Secret Passage somewhere, go score.
I would like that model at all. Am I the only one that hates this?
You
model?
Are the only one. This I think the Tunnel Rats are not a big deal for Schill. I think they may be the biggest deal for the faction. Because again, we've been missing anything in that Midnight Stalker slot, and for 6 points or seven out of keyword, we can just throw in a Secret Passage model.
And they have stealth too.
They are, if anything, fast with a good melee attack is on the field, they will die very, very easily.
They just die to anything that has a top end of 6 damage.
And to be fair, like we've discussed with LMA, and like we will discuss with V and Hardstop Herbert, every other keyword got something in this release that is good on that like mobile scheming vibe. But still, the other things they've got the ability to make hazardous terrain in case you're you need that. And as got mentioned in the chat, Hannah can copy Secret Passage. So
yeah, I saw that. I was like, I did not think of that. That is
paying 6 points to have Hannah teleport 12 inches seems good.
Yeah,
for a bonus action, by the way, because like in her case, it's a bonus action.
It becomes a bonus action.
Yeah, so you don't like Secret Passage, Dixon, on the Tunnel Rats, but do you like Secret Passage on Hannah?
I now have to think about that, because like, as soon as James said it, I said that smiley face, that was me, because I was like, oh, that has super value. How much of a force multiplier is having Hannah go 12 inches across the table?
Also, it's a small thing,
yes, you do.
But it's a random little efficiency boost. Hannah can also build in the I Can Dig It trigger when she does it, so she can guarantee a scheme marker wherever she shows up. Which is pretty nice if, say, Deathbeds is in the pool and then Hannah shows up behind someone going, why, hello there, and then she curb stomps them, and now you've just scored Deathbeds very comfortably.
The meme, just the Omaiwa Moshinde. <Yeah. laughs> she just appears behind the person, just flash.
So, I think the tunnel rats will prove to be a bit harder to kill than they look like on paper, because they not only do they have stealth, but if your opponent can't ignore severe terrain, then they can, every turn after they've teleported, they can just lay down their landmines to cover the approaches and force your opponent to move, slog through severe terrain if they want, and that is also hazardous if they want to get to them. So that sort of reduces the number of things that could necessarily threaten them.
And I think all of that is, even out of keyword, is worth 7 stones. Like, that's doing work for you.
And in their keywords, like Hamlin, this opens up so many options for Hamlin. Like, being able to just plug in a 6-point schema that can go get you like an outflank or something turns on these schemes that traditionally are not viable for Hamlin because you're playing too close to the center. Or I reckon the tunnel rats are enough to make Hamlin very good for stuff like plant explosives, which normally I'm a bit hesitant to play Hamlin on over a more mobile crew. Also, I just want to mention this. They have strength in numbers, and strength in numbers applies to their ranged attack as well. So they have a built-in positive to damage on a gun that has AoEs on its moderate and severe damage. Which
it's just 2-3-3 blast.
It's not the biggest thing in the world, but sometimes you'll like do 3 damage to 3 models in 1 shot from your 6-point model, which
fair. Okay, so it cannot be ignored because it is true. Like, you have to put him at 2 life, if I remember correctly. It's either 2 or 3 life for him to stop doing that damage.
Have to get down to 2 hit points. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, a thing that you have to watch out for until you smack it really hard. Even a normal model with a 2-3-4 can still put this model below the threshold. So that's actually balanced, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's fine. But because of their ability to teleport the entire table and do it, there will be occasions where you get some unexpected kills, I think, with the tunnel rats as well.
Yep. I think that the fact that they have disease is kind of weird. It's like, why is this like a payback kind of thing? Like, you activate next to this model and kill it, but in response to that, you got a blight.
I was really hoping that they'd have a demise ability or something that would suggest that they're actually just like a bunch of rats wearing uniforms.
Oh, that would have been so cool. That would have been so cool.
If instead of like nihilism is the really random waste of text thing, because it's okay, but like that they die so easily that your opponent probably isn't going to try and control them with conditions, and like, if they do, half the time you're not going to bother wanting to spend the card on it. It's it exists. I don't dislike having it, but I wish instead of nihilism they had like demise, like something similar to the Bayou version of like better things to do, where when they die, just drop a rat base to base with them or something.
I would have been very happy if instead of the season nihilism, they had armor 1 and that demise.
Yeah.
Like us talking about it, if they literally just had that, that would be great.
Their stat card had probably been out for a full week before I realized they didn't have armor, because I just assumed it's a Frycore model. They should have armor. What's going on? But
I mean, you look at the picture and it looks like they have armor.
Yeah. But I can understand that at that point, they're probably so survivable with stealth, armor, landmines covering the approaches, and the vast distances they can move, that they're probably... That would probably push them over the edge into being 7 points that you would bring in almost every single outcast keyword.
C'est la vie. I think the thing that James presented alone is making me just like check these models again. I'm like, okay, wait a second. How important is it to have Hannah?
And this is why we talk them out too, because when you look at it in a vacuum, you're kind of like, oh yeah, this is kind of, but then you start, when somebody's like, well, have you thought about piecing it together with Hannah? Or have you thought about doing this? That's when you really kind of line things up. But for these two models, I mean, I would say Freecor Plague winning, but it sounds like Outcast kind of win here with the Tome Rats.
Yeah, I'd say so. The only thing holding them back is that they do need an 8 for Secret Passage, really. So some of the more resource-strapped keywords are a bit of a struggle. I know some people are excited to play them in Tara, because they can have a good, like, they can send Tara down one flank and the Tunnel Rats down the other flank and have really difficult to catch high mobility scheming options on both sides of the table.
It's a lot of 7 and 8s.
Yeah. I think the card burden in Tara is maybe a bit too high for me to want to really do that strategy, but, like, you know, I can see the value in it, even if I think the cards are a lot.
But the 50 millimeter also makes it so they're very hard to hide, which is the number one reason why at first I didn't like them.
Yeah, but stealth and landmines and hopefully some choke points go a long way, I suspect. So we'll see. Yeah.
We will see.
Nevertheless, very excited for them. But largely, like, the obvious caveat on any Secret Passage model is in the right pool, on the right table.
Yep, exactly. Well, let's go ahead, and we kind of mentioned the Obliteration Tara. Mm. So let's talk about her models. And I guess they're amalgam models too, so this is what Levy is going to be dealing with.
This is one of the other, like, it was Tunnel Rats and these two that I'm just like, eh?
I think these are a lot stronger in Levy than they are in Tara. In Tara, I don't think... Tara has this, like, currently the default Tara build is to just hire every non-minion and summon the minions and call it a day. I don't think these replace any of the existing models, with the exception being that if my opponent is, like, has obeys or has a way to target buried models, I probably bring V instead of the Scion. But they are really interesting models. They're both
in the wheelchair. Hardstop awesome.
Herbert, yeah. Like they're both tough. They're both armor one models. V has hard to kill. Hardstop Herbert has hard to wound. Armor and hard to wound is such a great combination. It just makes you so annoying to deal with. Like if I was looking for an out of keyword schema. And I was considering bringing the Tunnel Rats for 7 points, but my opponent has access to Mature Nephilim. Paying that extra point for a model that doesn't just die into Mature Nephilim swings in Hardstop Herbert is a pretty big deal. He's what, like I said with LMA and then the Tunnel Rats, Hardstop Herbert is the third model where we just got, like, this really good independent scheming model who that can kind of take the place of what the Midnight Stalker used to do, where he's tough, he's movement 6, he has onward, so he can move as a bonus action. His main weakness is, unlike LMA and the Tunnel Rats, he can't really do anything scheming-wise if he gets engaged his one trick is that he can try to hit his Burst of Speed trigger on his melee attack and use that to get out of melee. But or he can also bury himself with one of his other actions, but that doesn't help you scheme that turn. That just lets you set up for next turn. So the big thing that these two have that makes them really interesting, and Levy specifically, is they've both got this rule called Back in a Flash, which lets them, if they're buried, they've got the same From Nothing rule that Tara models have, which lets them end the fast condition to unbury and base contact with a model, which... it's really interesting from an Outcast-wide perspective, because we've got the Dead Outlaw exists in Bandit and Tormented, and the Student of Conflict exists in Mercenary, and we've got Stolen handing out fast in Hamelin. So we have a lot of keywords that have ways of giving out fast that these two could use to unbury themselves. And then in Amalgam, they've got... this Back in a Flash rule, which is just a freebie. You can just always unbury next to any unactivated amalgam model, which creates like so much flexibility. If Herbert is buried, and you've got like a Necropunk on one flank or a waif just dawdling somewhere, Herbert could just be anywhere, unbury, move 12 inches and interact in order to get you a point.
The thing is, horses exist, and the riders are doing that slightly better, at least from what I've noticed.
If you're playing Levy 2?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. And yeah, I wouldn't bring these in Levy 2. This is purely a Levy 1 consideration.
And you think that they're better than the current choices for Levy 1?
I think so, because like a Necropunk doesn't have the suit on their leap built in, so for the extra point or two that you pay for Hardstop Herbert, just only needing a 5 is pretty great. V is... I think V is a really interesting model. I think Gather Intel is great in...
I think the trigger on Gather Intel, that is pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
I think that's the main reason why I'm actually excited about this model. If I was going to put it on the table. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not excited about these two models because they don't look or feel like anything that I want. But if I was going to put them on the table, it would be specifically because of V and because of that one trigger.
Yep. And it's always worth noting
to the listeners, the trigger is basically you get negatives to attack those models for a mask.
Yes, out of sync. That she's also got a trigger on her Gather Intel that lets her bury herself, which is something both she and Herbert have. They've got ways to just, instead of needing another model to hit them with Stutter Time to make them buried, they've both got triggers to bury themselves on certain actions. And then V also has Stutter Time. So if you brought V and Herbert into an amalgam crew, V can bury Herbert and then bury herself with a Gather Intel, which also draws your card.
That was actually a thing that I was going to ask you about because of that trigger. I was thinking about her specifically in Levy 2, specifically, again, just to like do that trigger, put a beater horse that is negative to hit. I thought that was like huge high value. And then later on in the game, you could summon an amalgam with Levy 2. And then because I summon an amalgam, depending on where you in the turn you actually summoned it, since he hasn't activated, if the opponent doesn't have any more activations, she can unbury with that model. Just like little things for the value. Again, I am not excited about these models, but like I have to admit, that is a very powerful...
You do things.
Yeah, that is a very powerful little combo right there.
Yeah, she's also a healer, and you know, Levy 1 never says no to another healer. Jury Rig is a really interesting one. There's a lot of ways to use the Jury Rig bonus action, which like just lets you guarantee having a suit. Like you can guarantee having a high crow for Levy 1's Necrotic Decay attack. Or honestly, sometimes I think it will be valuable because you already have tools for the job for that purpose. Sometimes I reckon it'll be good just to guarantee her triggers. Like if she can throw away any card of like 4 or higher and guarantee out of sync on her Gather Intel or non-existence if she needs to bury.
You can Gather Intel with a 5 of mask, do your bonus action, discard a 4, grab that 5 right back into your hand and do it again.
Yep.
That's a small value thing that you can do to guarantee that 2 of your beaters are now negatives to hit for the rest of the turn.
And remember, Gather Intel has a chance to give the people nearby distracted, so your opponent could be at 2 negatives to hit and not even have the option to like focus through it.
This is the same also true. The same action Harrison has, correct?
Yes, that is Harrison Frotcham's famous action that got him nerfed to the ground. Well, that and the pass token.
It was the pass token.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both, in my opinion.
So, I mean, from what I'm hearing from you guys, it sounds like Levy probably likes this a little bit better just because I think it gives him some options that he probably didn't have as many of, or at least as reliable.
Yeah, I think they're a really mobile scheming pair in Levy because of that.
Dude, back that in wheelchair, a flash letting, Herbert, dude.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
And you combine this that probably... with back in a flash, letting them go all over the table. Kind of like the they're just really flexible models, I think, in Amalgam, particularly because Back in the Flash doesn't require setup the way From Nothing does. I think in Tara, though, they're a much harder sell because that core Tara crew is so tightly knit. All the models synergize so well with one another. And
I think the real thing that you can do that's amazing with this model is if you see that your opponent's trying to like hunt down Herbert, you can sit there and you just look at him and say, listen, you better leave Herbert alone, because if you attack him, you're being ableist and I'm not going to allow that kind of hate and bigotry.
And hey, you've got Back to the Future references out the wazoo well.
No. Equal opportunity. No, equal opportunity. What is it? The hammer of justice is equal opportunity.
Dixon's over here flipping wheelchairs and pounding Herbert into the ground.
You deserve this!
All right, let's get this last weird model, Bad Omen. I don't even know what this thing does.
Reference, like a ghost cat thing. This is a reference to Puss in Boots. This is Death Incarnate. This is Death Incarnate.
I will note the Bad Omen was showing up in Parker stories a long time before The Last Wish came out. So Puss in Boots ripped off Parker first.
No. So The Last Omen was around. You are absolutely correct. But the design of this model specifically, there is no denying it. This is The Last Wish, the Death. This is Death.
Yep.
This model's a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be when I looked at the art.
Oh, he's huge. Uh-huh. If you haven't seen The Last Wish, that movie is amazing.
I haven't.
Yeah, that movie's amazing. It's actually very, very good.
I'd agree.
Like anybody.
Yeah. It's solid.
And the Bad Omen, literally everything in this card, if you see the movie, it's in there.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good to know.
What
does it actually do, though?
Look, it's... I've played this model once, and I need to play a few more games with it because the math of it is hard to hold in your head. It's fundamentally what it does is it screws with your opponent's Soulstone users by forcing them to discard a card every time they want to use a Soulstone. And it has this really cool bonus action that just works, where it can pick an enemy model that hasn't yet activated, and if it is in line of sight of Bad Omen when the end phase hits, it has to throw away a card with of a 9 or higher or a Soulstone, and if it does neither of those, the model just dies automatically.
It's a free execute. It's literally bonus action for an execute.
With it no flip or anything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just straight up that model within 8 inches of me. That is not a leader, so I guess, you know, your master is free.
The problem I've had with this model is that it's 10 stones, so it's freaking expensive. Yeah. It's not actually that dangerous a beater for its cost. A 2-4-6 is a decent damage track, but it's 10 points. It doesn't have flurry or anything. It doesn't have easy ways to get focus. It's... other attack eventuality is decent, but it only becomes like really good turn 4 or 5. And it's suppress magic is very dependent on you going hard into your opponent's stone users, which aren't always the easiest things to kill. So it's encouraging a line of play that doesn't necessarily pay dividends immediately. And
I think the fact that it's both incorporeal and Vengeance 1 in Outcast is a thing that they probably like oversold. It's like out of all the, there's a bunch of models that are like this throughout every faction and the new stuff, right? And I think this is unfortunately one of the models that did not get the extra oomph to be good. Because he's competing with the Emissary and other 10-point models in Outcast.
Yeah, like you, and so many of our keywords have strong 10-point models. Like you're not bringing, like in Bandit, you've already brought Mad Dog and the Emissary. In Shill, you've already brought Arik and Hannah. Then there's like the keywords that straight up don't function with it. Like Leviticus doesn't want this model because you're doing irreducible damage and you don't want a You can't punish your opponent for using soul stones if you're not letting them use soul stones in the first place. So it's just sort of not doing anything there. I think this model does work very well in Jackdaw. because you're already going to have deleted your opponent's hand, so they're going to have no way to start. So it's kind of making Jackdaw's attacks irreducible damage against Soulstone users. Like, it's denying their ability to use Soulstones because they've run out of cards. And then it makes, and then it's like another execute pressure for the end of phase with their encroaching, with the impending doom bonus action.
I'm kind of on the side that this is a good model to just throw into your enemy, mostly because of the demise.
Yep.
But if you find any sort of anti-demise, this model is not as good.
And the demise is notable as well because it also attaches an upgrade, so it turns on more torment stuff with Jackdaw. This model's like entire card reads almost like it's a Jackdaw keyword model. Frankly, it's
based. That's not wrong because of the incorporeal and all the other like face me, you know, have no cards in your hand kind of thing.
Yep. So I'll run this in Jackdaw. I've been testing it not in Jackdaw because I can see that it's good in Jackdaw. So where I was curious was how good stuff like suppress magic would be in non-Daw lists. And most of my games of testing so far, it's been too hard to fit into a list because it's just so expensive. And then the one game I did get on the table, it did not do 10 points worth of work. It was
interesting.
So I'll start running some Jackdaw lists with it though and see how it fares, because I think there's some very strong potential there.
Even with Arrhythmia.
The
Arrhythmia is in the upgrade.
Arrhythmia is on the upgrade. Yeah, it has to die for Arrhythmia to come up, and because it is an incorporeal model with Vengeance, your opponent kind of doesn't want to attack it. So. Sometimes it like the one game I played with it, my opponent looked at the upgrade and looked at how hard this thing was to kill in the first place and went, I'd rather just kill other stuff, honestly.
he does hand out injured fairly easily, but he only has two attacks.
And that is valid.
So like a free he has a free walk technically for turns one and two.
Yeah.
And then after that, you kind of just want to toss that execute over and over again until like something dies.
I got stuck scheming with him on turn four and five, and boy, that bonus action feels bad at that point.
You have to move it in.
Hey, you over there, die, and then walk away from them. They're like, no, wait.
It does have on your heels, so I mean, that's not terrible.
Yeah, look, I actually think this is a well-designed model because it's a 10-point versatile that I don't feel obliged to throw into every single list, which is the risk that they run when they make a very powerful 10-point model. And I'm talking up the negatives. I don't think this is actually applicable for like the majority of Outcast crews, but in Jackdaw specifically, and I think it's fine for a new release that it to just have like one fairly specific use case, and I think this has that. So it is playable. It has an space where you play it. You probably don't bring it most of the time.
Yeah. I would love to see this model in other keywords, but you're right. The space is very tight.
So looking at kind of finishing up, looking at all this Outcast stuff. So there's two things that we'll kind of ask to kind of finish this up. First one that I always ask out of the episodes we've done is, what model are you most excited about playing out of this new batch of models? So out of everything, which one are you guys kind of like, yeah, this is the one that's like, I can't wait to get on this table. I can tell just, well, one, I think you like all the nurse stuff, the asylum stuff, and you definitely like most of the half.
Yeah, and we
stuff.
Played it. When we were talking about Silas, you were not here, but you played against some of the asylum models and you played with the asylum models. They're not bad. It's just, Liam was pointing out some things that are true. Like some of the asylum models are just going to die. I will take that into account.
Malifaux.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take that into account to see if they can do their job before they die. But he's not wrong. Most of the models are very squishy.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Aren't also the little minions for Castor half-bloods?
No. Some of them are Nephilim, okay, but not the little ones. I think the little ones are just returned.
That's what.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So if you want to do that, you play Barbaros.
Correct.
Between Yannick, Barbaros, and Silas, Outcasts really are the faction of we can take everything. I think
we can play every faction.
I think Arcanist,
that mercenary kind of.
Is it Arcanist and like Ten Thunders are like the only factions in the game now where we can't steal a keyword from?
Technically, we have a couple of models from Ten Thunders, but you're right, nothing from Arcanist.
Yannick can use a couple of the new models that are also syndicated.
Yeah, and but that's it's a little bit different from like there are some models that have shared keywords, but like I'm thinking more in terms of stealing an entire keyword the way Barbaros Silas can. For me, what I'm really excited about, I think LMA has probably been the most. It's interesting because on paper, six arm six shooters was what I was really excited about because just anytime I see scheme marker shenanigans, I get excited. But Benny, it's all for Benny. But LMA is just like she's cool. Add a keyword. She's really flexible in terms of how she plays. She combos like she's got that really fun thing they've done a lot in this expansion of having really cool and like combos with with other models. I do slightly wish the model's pose didn't look, because like LMA is one of the only bandits that doesn't have run and gun. She has sniper instead, but her pose to me screams run and gun.
The model looks like she's
so,
running.
So the pose irks me just a little bit on that front, but she's a fast schemer. She's hard to kill. She can shoot. She can kind of just do a little bit of everything while also having that really cool like combo play with her paired model. And she tells a really compelling story. Like she's clearly marking someone for death and she's here to get her revenge. I wish Vendetta was still in the GG pool just for her.
Man, you're right. That would have been so cool.
So yeah, I think LMA's got my vote.
Yeah, I want to say Tunnel Rats, but man, Heartstop Herbert just hits the right vibe for me. This dude just just pushing himself around in a wheelchair. He
pushing himself. Decent. He says that thing has an engine, a V8.
LMA, Herbert, and the Tunnel Rats are the honorary are all getting honorary mentions in my book because all three of them are those like Midnight Stalker replacements that I think the faction has been looking for quite a few few years at this point.
They definitely have, because when my buddy was playing Brian, he was playing Von Schill, and he was just like, man, how do I scheme in this GG? And this release, I think, gives a lot of options to Outcast where you can just pick whichever schemer you like for whichever situation, and they can give you a little something to help you win the day.
Rocket boots, not enough? What the crap? I'm going to find out.
It's not. Their AP is not efficient enough, and you can only hand out so
many
boots.
It's a problem when you have to spend an action to make another model be good at scheming.
And once they're out there with those boots, they use them, they get kicked off unless you're the free corpsman, but then you're taking damage to keep them on, and eventually you're going to die.
And then there's the
that's fair.
I am pretty excited to put rocket boots on Tunnel Rats and just see how far I can go in a turn. But
I'm gonna leap. I'm a secret passage.
Like, I think the only reason you won't see Tunnel Rats in every Outcast crew is that they gave every Outcast crew a way to scheme, like in keyword. So we don't even have strong, which is great because Outcasts for me have always been very one of the factions that is most keyword focused. We just have such strong keyword synergies that we don't really need to grab out of keyword stuff too often. And this release maintains that. These are all models that are solid in their keywords. You don't need to bring them out of keyword to get that same tech because we got similar tech sort of across the board. It's a really cool release. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, Liam, you're an outcast homer. I mean, I don't even know if you play any other faction, but and Dixon, I know that this brought you kind of, I feel like this pushed you back into Outcast once you saw some of these cool models. So I think you both are pretty optimistic for this release and kind of how it's going to help win games.
In a competitive sense, I think Ellie Mae and the Six Shooter are going to bring more to the faction than any other model in this release. But I, after listening to you guys, I'm going to have to recant the Tunnel Rats thing, because I didn't think about Tunnel Rats giving Hannah that. Like, that's insane, in my opinion.
That's so good.
Just absolutely absurd. And so, yeah, so those two things, I can't think of a bad model. Like, I'm excited to find out if some of these models are bad. But I right now, I just can't see it. Even the trial and error models, like, you look at them, you're like, these models look like they should be bad, but there's something about them that makes me go, maybe not.
Yeah, I think if we've got a dud, it will probably prove to be the bad omen. But yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And it's not because he's not going to do his job. It's because
he's just so expensive.
Why would you bring him instead of other models?
Well, and even then, it's still a fun model. Yeah. Like, you could bring this and still do things with it, right? It's not like it's going to, because there are sometimes you put a bad model on the table and you're like, this does nothing. Like, this is just a big nothing burger. And that model still does something.
I don't think me and Liam think that he's a bad model. I think that in his space, there are other models that just synergize better. And
it's hard to squeeze him in there, too.
Yeah, because like when we were talking about Bat Omen, it wasn't that he was bad. It was just like, he does something really good for Jackdaw, and everybody else, he's just fine.
Mm.
I think the big point you guys made that was really good is Outcasts do have just like expensive models. Like, Outcasts have a lot of like 9 and 10 stone models and a lot of their keywords that it's just like, man, there's not a lot of room for another versatile 10 stone model.
The amount of times that I've seen people say, it was like, well, just bring fucking whatever, the guy with the giant shotgun.
Oh, Mad Dog.
Just bring the giant shotgun guy. Yeah, Mad Dog.
Yeah, 11 stones.
Yeah, it's just a casual 11 stones out of keyword to destroy markers.
Who is also only good if you've also brought the emissary. So now it's 21 soul stones. So you're barely touching your own keyword. So why didn't you just declare bandit? I don't know. I have a serious problem with bringing Mad Dog into everything. I think he's just got too many weaknesses and he's too easy to counter for the 20 stones of investment that you have to put in to make him good.
Every time I've brought him out a keyword, Dixon just runs something up into him and then I got to burn people with cigars, try and pry him loose, and it's just a whole mess. Yep.
Get him out of combat. Block line of sight. It's like, it's so silly.
Well, but yeah, just anyway, him staggered is the saddest thing in the world.
It's true.
True.
Anyway.
Him staggered is super sad.
Well, anything else about the release that you guys want to put out there before we wrap this thing up?
We're playing Silas. Next time we do a battle report, we got to put Silas
on.
Dude,
yeah. Get some practice with him and we'll do a video on him.
Yeah. Well, I got to play against you anyway, so I might as well practice against you.
We'll get a game in the next few days here.
Yeah.
Hope it goes well, because I do want
Liam, anything you want to plug or say?
No, not at the moment, I don't think. I'm just really keen for these releases. I think I had a lot of issues with the last cycle with the Madness of Malifaux stuff, and I think they've really course corrected very well with the Ashes releases. Just looking at what other factions got, so much of it is so thematic and really interestingly designed, and so much cleaner, I think, than a lot of the way Madness was written. So there's just a lot of models where I read them and I code that. That is just such a cool concept for a model. I love it.
So I want to share my excitement of bringing me back to Arcanist that I do want. Because I do like the Arcanist stuff better than the Rezzer stuff that got released. There wasn't a lot in the Rezzer stuff where I'm like all jazzed about. But in the Arcanist, like the keywords that I play, and also this is something that has me kind of pumped and I hope it works out and keeps my excitement on this keyword. December is actually looking a little fun for me. Like, you get the big, you know, frozen alligator and something that you obviously get the snow, whatever new model that came out too. That's really good. But I was talking with everybody in the Discord, and we were kind of sitting here spitballing all this December nonsense. And we were like, dude, you want to know what else you could do? You could bring Miranda as a healer for the alligator and the deer. And, you know, she has her own upgrade too. So then she can turn into the Blessed of December and switch back and forth from that. And I was just like, you know, that sounds like my jam. I think I'm going to try that out. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Good times.
Dixon, you're going to play against it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm perfectly happy. I think Silas has the tools.
Yeah, I think, and especially knowing you, this is the man that likes playing Puppet as a, you know, a Hinamatsu led keyword. So I think you're going to find some fun stuff you're going to do with Silas.
Oh, yeah.
All right, but I think we're going to wrap it up there. I want to thank you again, Liam, for coming on. It was a lot of fun just chatting it up with you. And, yeah, until next time, make sure that you guys are flipping cards and flipping tables. We will see y'all later.